We present today Teresa of Avila.
Doña Teresa de Cepeda Ahumada was born in Avila, Spain, on March 28, 1515. The child of well-born parents, she grew up in one of those palacios or mansions which can still be seen in Avila today. Later, Teresa used the image of these palaces to describe what she believed a contemplative convent should be, a fortress manned with a chosen company of the king's soldiers.
And in her masterpiece, Interior Castle, she wrote, "I began to think of the soul as if it were a castle made of a single diamond or a very clear crystal, in which there are many rooms, just as in heaven there are many mansions."
Teresa's mother died when she was 13, and after a stormy adolescence, she entered the Carmelite convent of the Incarnation. Teresa was afraid of marriage, and 16th century Spain offered no alternative but the cloister. A life of purgatory, Teresa reasoned, would mean an eternity of joy.
When we think of Teresa today, we tend to visualize the final product, the mystic and the saint. But the young woman who passed through the convent door on that chill November morning in 1536 was a long way from sainthood. For many years, she was unable even to pray, as she herself tells in her life story.
"I suffered great affliction when I tried to pray, for my spirit, instead of being master, was slave. I was unable to shut myself within myself, without at the same time shutting in 1,000 irrelevances. Often I was more taken up with wishing away my hour of prayer and listening whenever the clock struck than in thinking good thoughts. Again and again I would have chosen any severe penance that might be imposed on me rather than have to practice recollection as a preparation to prayer. I found neither joy in God nor satisfaction in the world. When I was caught up in the pleasures of the world, I was unhappy in recalling what I owed to God. When I was with God, I was restless, craving for what the world had to offer. I passed almost 20 years on this storm-tossed sea. But I realized that by this time it was no longer possible to give up prayer. He who desired me for himself held me in his hand, and I realized the greatness of God's compassion for me. For while I was still entangled with the affairs of the world, he gave me the courage to pray."
Teresa spent 26 years in the Incarnation Convent, a hurly-burly of a place, she called it. 150 women lived in this fashionable convent, where the much mitigated rule allowed nuns to come and go as they chose, where visitors were frequent and gossip was rife. Teresa herself was drawn for a time into the superficial friendships of the convent parlour, but she gradually tired of this shallow kind of life, and at the age of 43, the idea of the reform came to her.
In 1562, Teresa founded the first convent where those so disposed could live according to the primitive rule of the Carmelites, in the spirit of the original hermits of Mount Carmel, consecrated to silence and contemplative prayer. But though she scaled the mystical heights, Teresa was very down to earth in her approach to prayer.
"When I see someone trying to work out what kind of prayer they are practicing, and are so engrossed in prayer that they are afraid, apparently, to move an inch or spare a moment's thought for fear they be deprived to the slightest degree of the devotion they are enjoying, I realize how little they know about the road to union with God. They think that this is the whole thing. Well, it isn't. Not at all. What the Lord wants is works. If you see someone sick to whom you can bring help, don't imagine your devotions will suffer. Have compassion. If she is in pain, try to share her pain. If need be, go without food so that she may have yours."
In the 20 years that followed the foundation of the first reformed convent, until her death in 1582, Teresa was to found 16 more convents. She faced considerable opposition, was denounced from the pulpit and described as a restless, contumacious, disobedient gadabout. Since she had to make her foundations in person and be on the spot to resolve problems, she was constantly on the move.
And yet this nun, while living a life of exceptional activity, was dedicated to silence and contemplation and became one of the world's greatest mystics. Her writings on prayer have never been surpassed. She was asked to write on prayer for the nuns of her own convent. Like Teresa in her early years as a nun, they found prayer difficult, but she protested.
Why do they want me to write things? Let learned men who have studied do the writing. There are more than enough books written on prayer already. For the love of God, let me work at my spinning wheel and go to choir and perform the duties of the religious life like the other sisters. I am not meant to write. I have neither the health nor the wits for it.
But Teresa did have the wits, and her words were wise and full of common sense.
Why do we use so many words, she said, when the petitions contained in the Our Father cover all our needs, spiritual and temporal? From foolish devotions may God defend us.
Teresa also gives clear directives to those who have to deal with religious of a nervous kind.
Superiors should not, in general, allow nuns who are neurotic to spend long stretches of time at prayer. Usually, the imagination of such persons is their weak point, and too much prayer only does harm. Besides, they get extraordinary ideas which neither they themselves nor others who hear of such goings-on can possibly understand.
Much has been said about St. Teresa's mystical experiences. She herself was frequently embarrassed by them, especially when she had raptures in public. As for their significance, she was categorical and advised others to be wary of mystical phenomena.
Though some such phenomena may be genuine, I'm sure it is best to regard them of no importance. God guides some people in one way, some in another. And this particular path is not the one which leads to the greatest sanctity. Progress in the spiritual life has nothing to do with consolations granted during prayer, nothing to do with raptures, visions, and the like, the value of which we cannot estimate until we reach the world to come.
In her interior castle, Teresa asks her readers, who were her co-sisters, what they think God's will is, and answers that they should be perfect and be one with him. She goes on.
The Lord asks two things of us. Love of God and love of our neighbour. If we want to know whether we are keeping these commandments, we must discover, I believe, whether we genuinely love our neighbour. For we cannot be sure if we are loving God, whereas we can know if we love our neighbour. Ask the Lord to give you this perfect love for others. Allow him to work within you. If you do your best to fulfil this in every way you can, he will give you more than you can desire.
Finally, Teresa suggests that as regards mental prayer, it's a question of a relationship between friends. That is her own experience, and she says, I can speak of what I have experience of.
Mental prayer, in my opinion, is nothing else than an intimate sharing between friends. It means taking time frequently to be alone with him whom we know loves us. In order that love be true and the friendship endure, the wills of the friends must be in accord. The will of the Lord, it is already known, cannot be at fault. Our will is vicious, sensual, and ungrateful. And if you do not yet love him as he loves you, because you have not reached the degree of conformity with his will, you will endure this pain of spending a long while with one who is so different from you, whose friendship is of such immense benefit, and who loves you so much.
Teresa of Avila died at Alba de Tormes on October the 4th, 1582. She was canonized by Pope Gregory the 15th 40 years later. And on October the 15th, 1967, Pope Paul VI declared her a doctor of the Church.
After Teresa's death, this prayer was found in her breviary.
Be thou by naught perturbed, of naught afraid, for all things pass save God, who does not change. Be patient, and at last thou shall of all fulfillment find. Hold God, and naught shall fail thee, for he alone is all.